second reading from Ephesians 4. Ephesians 4. All passes 7-16. Ephesians 4, the verses 7-16. It says, but to each one of us, grace has been given as Christ apportioned. This is why it says, when he ascended on high, he took many captives and gave gifts to his people. What does he ascended mean, except that he also descended to the lower earthly regions? He who descended is the very one who ascended higher than all the heavens, in order to fill the whole universe. So Christ himself gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors, and teachers to equip his people for works of service, so that the body of Christ may be built up until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God, and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. Then we will no longer be infants, tossed back and forth by the waves, and blown here and there by every wind of teaching, and by the cunning and craftiness of people in their deceitful scheming. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become, in every respect, the mature body of him who is the head, that is, Christ. From him, the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love, as each part does its work.
If you were to ask anybody here in the room who is a Christian, what is at the heart of their Christian faith? I think they would probably tell you that it's the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Those are the things, actually, that we kind of talk about and celebrate a lot in church life, if you think about it. We just had Christmas, and at Christmas we say that it's important that Jesus came to earth and lived a life on earth. In a few months' time, we'll celebrate Easter. And at that time, we're going to say that it's important that Jesus Christ died and rose again. And if you think about those things that we talk about a lot to Christ Church and at any church, it makes sense that that is the heartbeat of the Christian life, because Jesus' life, death, and resurrection are what brought forgiveness of sins, a way that we can come to God. His life, death, and resurrection. But if you look back into Christian history, years, generations, centuries ago, Christians have always thought there's something else that's really important. See, after Jesus' life, death, and resurrection, there's something else the Bible tells us he did, and that is that he ascended into heaven. So the traditional church calendar has got a week in there called Ascension Sunday, where people always used to come together and celebrate the ascension, Jesus ascending into heaven, thinking how important that is. If you think of every time we say what we believe when we kind of read the words on the screen, a creed, it's got lines about the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. He descended to the dead, was buried, and rose again on the third day, according to the scriptures, and he ascended. You see, historically, Christians have always said Jesus ascending into heaven is really, really important. But that is part of the heartbeat of our faith. But I wonder whether today we might not be so sure about why that's so important. Maybe it makes sense to you that it's the explanation as to why Jesus isn't here in person. But it's almost the kind of embarrassing thing that Jesus isn't here in person. That Jesus would have been around for us to look at and check out and prove the gospel is true, but he's not anymore. And the ascension can seem to us like something that we would rather not talk about. Maybe we think it's sort of the less ideal way of doing things. You can imagine how amazing it would have been if Jesus had stayed on earth. And he could have travelled around preaching, and everyone could have come to him. If you had any questions, you could go and ask Jesus. Jesus by now would be a global speaker. He'd have a podcast, a global tour. He'd be on every YouTube channel. We'd hear from Jesus directly. And all those difficult questions that me and Morris can't answer, you'd be able to go to Jesus with them. We'd invite him as a visiting speaker. And there'd be no doubt in anyone's mind that this is all true. We'd have the living proof right there that Jesus is the Son of God. I wonder why Jesus chose not to stay. I wonder if that would have been better. So his ascension can feel like it's something a bit problematic today. But why did Jesus choose to leave? Why did he have to leave? Was there some kind of divine appointment he couldn't get out of? Did the Father summon him back because there was some emergency at the pearly gates? Or is there an even better thing that he's got in store, that he ascends to heaven? Well, the book of Ephesians that we've been looking at since September, the book of Ephesians you've got open in front of you, is the clearest place in the Bible that tells us that there was a plan, there is a plan, something even better for the church than Jesus staying and touring. There is a plan that Jesus is going to win the world, draw all people to himself, and he will be present on earth in a body. But that body is the church. Now, I think it's often hard for us to get our head around the church being the body of Jesus, because we often think, well, it's the body of Jesus metaphorically. We're quite happy using the word body like a metaphor. We say it's a body of water. Or if there's some great writer, he's written many books, you say that's his body of work. And what we mean by body is it's lots of individual things, but sort of brought together in a collection. And when they're all brought together, all these individual things brought together, we say that's a body. It's like an illustration, a metaphor. And we can get our heads around that. But Ephesians, I think, pushes us to go further. That Jesus wants the church to actually be the place where he lives. So he wants our eyes and our ears and our minds and our mouths and our hands and our feet to think what he thinks, to say what he says, to do what he does. In a very real sense, just like at Christmas, Jesus came to the earth in a body. So actually now, he makes the church the physical vehicle that will be his presence in the world. And just like Christmas is Jesus coming down to be among us in the body of a baby, well, we are to think of the church just like Christmas. Jesus has come to live in a body, hands and feet, physical, tangible, touchable things. And that body is us. And that begins with his ascension. Have a look at verses 7 and 8. But to each one of us, grace has been given as Christ apportioned it. This is why, it says, when he ascended on high, he took many captives and gave gifts to his people. But when Jesus ascended, at that point, he made sure that his disciples on earth and every follower that would come after him would be equipped, not just for knowing the truth about him now that he's gone, or not just equipping them for living out a life of faith in the world, but he gave gifts, grace as Christ apportioned it. As he ascended, he gave gifts to those who remained to equip them for being the body that he will live in. He equips the church to think as he thinks, to speak as he speaks, to do as he does. And to do that all united as one and growing in maturity together. Paul, the writer of this letter, he explains this using Psalm 68. That's the little quote in verse 8. That is a little quote from a song from earlier in the Bible, from Psalm 68, which is a song that says God is like a conquering king, one of the ancient kings, who'd ride out to battle. They'd conquer the enemy, And then the king would come back to the city they live in, and all the people in the city would come out and celebrate. They'd line the streets, and the king would lead a procession of the victorious army. He would have the prisoners, the enemies that he's taken captive, that he's now bringing into his onto his team from now on, and he would have the spoils of war, all the riches of the enemy, the most precious things that are in the world that the enemy had, that he now has. And he's got all those spoils of war, and this picture is one of him giving them out to his people. And that same song says, and he goes up that he might dwell among them. Now, Paul sees that psalm as a description of the church. That might not be a description of the church you normally think of, but he thinks this is what the church is like. We are people following a conquering king, right? Jesus' life, death, and resurrection, he's won all that we need him to. We follow the conquering king, and he is ascending to heaven, and he is giving out gifts so that he can live among them. The gifts are given out to the people to bring back into the city to make the building where he lives. And Paul thinks, you know, every element of that psalm is just like the church. We follow a conquering king. He goes to his dwelling place and he gives gifts that people might use those gifts to build his dwelling place. And so Jesus ascending into heaven wasn't him thinking, well, I'll leave them alone now. I'll come back later and I hope they're all right when I get back. Jesus isn't leaving his people alone when he ascends. It's him doing this procession, giving out gifts to say, I want to give you what you need to make a dwelling place for me so that I can live among you. And so it says to each one of us, grace has been given as Christ apportioned it. And to each person who follows Jesus, he's given a gift that you can bring it back. You have something to bring. Something to bring that builds up this group of people into a unified group of people who think and speak and live like Jesus. Well, that's the vision. Now, at each turn in this passage in Ephesians 4, the writer Paul, he kind of covers similar things but decides to get more practical. So we're not going to have like quite a linear sermon where we start here and get there. It's going to be going in a level deeper, a layer deeper, a layer deeper. Paul's now going to answer the question, yes, that's the vision. Jesus is building a body with gifts. But how do those gifts build the body? So let's take this a layer deeper. The next verses show that he is equipping the body with leaders. Our five-year-old started school in September, and she's doing really well. She really loves it. But one day she said, I don't want to go to school. And me and my wife said, well, why is that? Is everything okay? And she said, yeah, everything's okay, but I don't need to. I know my numbers. I can read, I can write. I'm not going back. Now, that's really funny when a little one thinks that they've been to school, that they have got what they need to live in the world. That I was thinking, well, this is a great stage to be at, because I can just help her for the rest of the day with her job applications. Then you and I know that to grow to maturity, to thrive as the person she's going to be, she needs to continue to sit under people who will teach her. And Jesus builds the church to be the body where he lives by giving gifts to the people. But to grow those people to maturity as they use their gifts, he gives the church people who will teach the gospel. There's four roles mentioned in verse 11. And some people have got different views on what these roles are. There's five words, but I think it's four different people. The apostles are the original people, the witnesses to Jesus' life on earth first time around. The 12 disciples, minus Judas, but plus an extra one they voted on, and although they drew lots for. And Paul, the original people who passed on the first truth about Jesus. There's the prophets, which usually in the Bible, when it says the prophets, it means Old Testament prophets. You might think it's that, but here in the context, it seems like this is more like people that God has given the gifts of prophecy to, who build up the churches. There's evangelists, which are likely to be the people who are spreading the news of Jesus. People who perhaps are gifted in speaking to people who've never heard of Jesus, who spread the word of Jesus maybe where it's not heard. And there's pastors and teachers. It seems to be the same person who would do both of those things in the way that the grammar works here. Pastors and teachers are the people that God has gifted to work among the people, the body, to help them, to grow them, to teach them, to bed down in the teachings of the apostles. And Jesus has given the church leaders so that, verse 12, they can equip his people for works of service, so that the body of Christ may be built up until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. Do you notice here there's a connection going on? There's lots of connections here. I'll try and point them out as we go along. The church will be mature, at the end of verse 13, when it listens to its leaders. Now, it's not unusual to find people who say, well, I'm a Christian, but church isn't really my thing. I love reading the Bible, but I prefer to do that on my own. I've got lots of resources. I listen to good podcasts. There's loads of people on the internet. I can listen to their sermons. I'd rather actually not come to church, but I can get by perfectly well on my own. It's kind of me and my Bible. I listen to what God has to say to me, and I tell him what I want to say to him. It's me and God. But listen, not sitting under leadership, not learning from these people that God has given to the church, the people who are gifted in prophecy and evangelism, or people who are gifted in being pastor teachers, not learning from these people means not growing to maturity as a Christian. See, being led by and taught by qualified, biblically qualified, so people of good character, biblically qualified leaders is needed, verse 13 says, to reach unity in the faith and to reach this measure of the fullness of Christ, that is to be the people who do what Christ would do. Now, it's not just people who distance themselves from church who miss this. It's even people who are inside the church who seem to want to listen to leaders and teaching and preaching when they can sit in the pews and nod and think this is great, but who really ignore what the leaders say when it challenges them, when it's something that they don't like or makes them uncomfortable. If your link elder tells you that something you're doing is unwise, that something you're doing is sinful and needs to stop, well, listen to them. But notice that it's not simply that the leaders do the teaching and then the church becomes mature. There's a gap, there's one in the middle, there's a step in the middle. Verse 12, the apostles, prophets, evangelists, and pastors and teachers equip his people for works of service. God has given leaders to teach. Listening to them will help you be mature, but who does the works of service? It's the people. Now, as elders, we've really thought that this is something that's a need in our church. Not to say it's really lacking or abandoned it, but we've really felt a burden this year to say we want to foster our church to be a place where we see disciples of Jesus making other disciples. Where it's not just the thinking, that we're a large church now, so it's the staff and elders who do all the training and teaching and praying for others and looking after people. But we actually think, no, we want to still be a church where everybody is equipped and empowered to serve one another. But these verses are great because it shows us just the right kind of relationship that sitting under leaders and serving each other have. The model is this: people serving people under leaders. So, listen, it's under leaders, so it's not a case of starting up your own Bible study because you think you need to cover something that the leaders aren't covering. We're taking too long to get around to the topics that you really want, so you're going to start off this Bible study, or it's not a case of taking people aside to be their teacher, to teach them something you think the leaders are getting wrong. And those things have happened in our church, where people have wanted to teach and serve others, but not under leadership. And perhaps things are said that those people aren't accountable for. Things are said that aren't right, and well, as elders, we end up having to pick up the pieces. No, it's unity and maturity coming through sitting under those leaders. But you know, it is also under those leaders, people serving people. People being equipped and empowered by the teaching of the leaders to put the gospel into practice by meeting the needs of those around them. Under the leadership of the church, taking it on yourself to serve others, to meet their needs, to love them, to grow friendships with them, to serve them. So there's a kind of a flow here that to grow the church to be his mature body, Jesus gives the gifts as he ascends. Now, to equip the people to use and serve these gifts, to bring them to maturity, he gives leaders. And by listening to the leaders, the church learns to serve each other and build each other up. And that, verse 13, is that the way the church grows to maturity to be the body that Jesus wants us to be. When I first left university, I was thinking of whether I should go into ministry. That phrase, ministry, whether I should work for a church. And I went to a conference for people who are asking just that question. Should I go into ministry? Is ministry for me? And we looked at this passage in that conference. And I remember the thing that struck me was verse 12. Who does the works of service? In some translations it says ministry. Who does ministry? Well, it struck me that ministry is something we are all called to. I was taught, well, no matter whether you're paid to do it, whether you have it as your job or not, you are to do ministry. You are called to ministry. And because God wants you to use your gifts to serve the church where you are right now. And that's what I came away thinking. And I think that's true for all of us. God wants you to use your gifts to serve the church where you are now. Maturity is when you listen to leaders and you use your gifts to serve the church where you are now. That's how we reach unity and maturity. But then Paul gets even more practical. That's great, but what does that look like, using these gifts, pulling together towards maturity? What does that look like? Well, let's dig down another layer deeper. Paul says what that looks like is maturing the body in truth, in love. And Paul, in verses 14 to 16, describes two concrete things, practical things that you can put into practice, two concrete things that are features of a mature church: discernment and speaking the truth in love. He says, following on from verse 13 and 12 and 13, if you listen to leaders, and then you do works of service and build others up, that gets you to a maturity that helps you discern what is false and what is untrue, even if those things are popular and powerful. So have a look at verse 14. Then we will no longer be infants, tossed back and forth by the waves, and blown here and there by every wind of teaching and by cunning and craftiness of people in their deceitful scheming. I read a really interesting article yesterday about find a picture of her. This is Sienna Rose, she's a soul artist, taking Spotify by storm, apparently. I was listening to it yesterday, to kind of follow up reading this article. A really lovely, soulful sound, it's really quite chilled. Her top song, I think, as of yesterday, had got 5 million hits. She's come along, and in a short space of time, she's got loads and loads of popularity on Spotify. Celebrities have even kind of shared on Instagram posts of her music, saying how good it is and how cool it is to listen to. So Sienna Rose is the next big thing. However, the article I read yesterday says that it's quite possible that Sienna Rose isn't real. It looks like her music is AI generated completely from scratch. All the telltale signs are there. The people who can hear these things and who've studied these things can tell that there are features in the music that suggest like it's come from a computer generating it. The photos that she's put up are all this type of photo where you can't quite see exactly what is, like all the textures and everything. It's got kind of mood lighting and you can't quite see the realism in it. Besides, Sienna Rose has never played a gig. She's come from nowhere. She's never ever had a gig. She's never been on the circuit. No one's ever been to see her. No one's seen her in person. No one's got a selfie with her. And all her music has come out in huge volumes in a short space of time. More than any other artist can generate these things in a recording studio. Now, apparently it's still a question, so I was like, she might still be real. So I'm very sorry if this goes out on the internet and Sienna Rose is listening and you're a real person, I'm really sorry. But the article said that you wouldn't have known this, you wouldn't be able to discern what is real. But we need people to show us and teach us and bring us to that maturity to show us what is really real. It's easy to be swayed by something popular, to make her your favorite artist, to believe that something is good because other people say it's good. 5 million hits can't be wrong. It's easy to let that winds of culture blow you around so that you believe what they're saying, but this passage says being like that is like a rudderless boat. Just a boat with its sail up in the wind, blowing here and there wherever the wind is blowing. So be wary of following whichever Bible teacher. I mean, you can listen to Sienna Rose, that's fine. It's not that important, but you can take talk to me afterwards if you think it is, because it's a very interesting discussion. But when it comes to learning from the Bible, be wary, please, of whatever Bible teacher or Christian influencer or even Christian music that your Instagram feed or your X feed throws up at you. But whatever your feeds recommend to you or say it's perfect for you, listen, an algorithm that works out what's popular and what fits your preferences is not how you should find good Bible teaching on the internet. Popular influencers and popular podcasters are popular because they're going where the wind is blowing. And it feels good to follow. But listen to gifted, biblically qualified leaders in the church, people you know, who you know their story, they're accountable to you, and serve the church and build up the body. That's maturity, and that maturity helps you discern whether what you're following is false, even if it is popular. We've even had people in our own church who love to teach others, but not under leadership. And quite a few times we as elders have ended up picking up the pieces after someone has told someone else they can't possibly be a Christian because of the way they dress. Or insisting that certain spiritual experiences are really needed to be mature. Or teaching crazy things about what the Bible really teaches. Now the blame is with people spreading these ideas, but maturity guards against it. We have elders in our church to listen to. We have membership, where members or people in our church are asked to agree to our statement of faith. They're in regular contact with the elders. They're learning under leadership. There are people who are good to listen to, and you can identify those. So I want to say grow to maturity by listening to the gifted, biblically qualified church leaders, and so discern who you should listen to. There's discerning and there's speaking the truth in love, verse 15 and 16. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. I love that combination of truth and love. You know, there's a way of speaking the truth to someone, but it's not very loving. Usually we like to do that to point out someone's flaws. Like, I need to speak the truth to you. I've noticed you're late a lot of the time. Please can you just make sure you're on time in future? Or those guys over there, they're just all a little bit cliquey. Well, it's true. It's true to point out all those things, but it's not done to build others up in love. But there is a way that speaks in love, but doesn't really include any truth. When you're polite, but empty. Oh, I'm really sorry to hear you're struggling. Bye. I'll pray for you. Bye. Oh, don't worry that you're overwhelmed. Just take a break from Connect this week. Keep your problems to yourself and come back next week and I'm sure it'll be fine. Okay, you're going to say keep your problems to yourself. That doesn't sound very loving. But the idea of saying, just you go away and make sure you're all right. But maturity enters that conversation prepared to bring the gospel into a person's life. In love, to forgive them for those flaws, to have patience and grace when you'd rather speak the truth bluntly. But in truth, to challenge that person to say, well, maybe this isn't the right way to go. Maybe you don't need to distance yourself if you're overwhelmed. Maybe there's a rebuke or a conversation that's going to go deeper and open up. So again, there's a flow. Jesus builds his church with gifts. He gives leaders. Leaders equip people to serve and build up the church. And that leads to unity and maturity. And then you can discern what is true and speak the truth in love. But if it's like that, if there's a flow, then please be aware that you can't skip a step. And that's something that very often comes up in, again, in pastoral situations, and we handle them as a church, where people think they can speak the truth in love to somebody, but they're not really listening to leaders. People who think they've grown to maturity, but they have no intention of actually listening to the people appointed to teach them. And you can't listen to leaders without it leading you to serve others. If you're really taking them seriously, then they will equip you to serve. And if you're listening, serving, maturing, well, then why are you stepping back from speaking the gospel, speaking the truth in love into people's situations? But let's not skip a step. Let's not say we're mature if we're not listening and serving. Let's not enjoy the listening but refuse to serve. Let's not serve and listen but not speak the truth in love. But where people listen to the word of God through gifted and qualified evangelists, prophets and pastors and teachers, where that equips them to serve others, and they do that, they build up the church, where we strive towards unity and where we discern what is true and false, and where that leads us to speak the truth in love, well, verse 16 shows us that the ascended Jesus really is present in a body on earth. Not in one place at one time, but filling the whole earth, as is his plan. It says, from him the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. The church that describes is dynamic. It grows from him, and it grows and builds itself up. Gifts from Jesus to serve each other. He gives, we build. So Jesus' ascension doesn't mean he decided he would leave. He'd leave us, and we'd have to work things out until he comes again. Jesus ascended so that he could work out his plan, the verse 10 tells us, to fill the whole universe. Ephesians often uses that language, to fill everything, through all and in all, to be in everything, to bring everything to unity under Jesus as Lord. He is going to do that. He needs a body on earth to do that, and his body this time will not be a single person. But this time, we get to be a part of it.